Clark.
My debut, 1990 September, Bristol City away. To get that opportunity, what thousands of Geordies only dream of.
Lee Clark, 1-0.
Williams.
My first goal for Sunderland away at Leicester. It was a left foot volley. I didn't realise my left foot was for kicking the ball with it as well. I thought it was just for standard.
Hignett.
Playing against Chelsea and to score the first goal there is something that still lives with me now, and it's what most people will talk to me about.
Hignett with the ball. Ron Higgy. You beauty! You Scouser Teesside beauty!
Worshipped every weekend. It's the three legends. Banter and rivalry across the North East on the Toon, the Cat, the Red.
It is the three legends on the Cat, the Toon and the Red. And good evening to Darren Williams, Lee Carr and Craig Hignett. How are we doing, gents?
All right, Daz. Thanks, Daz.
Being better, bit.
It's been quite a week in football, hasn't it?
Well, Daz, can we just leave Darren Williams to last? Because okay, yeah. if he starts his show, that's it, mate.
Everybody be switching off.
It's not that bad, is it, Daz?
Oh, mate, it is. It could put it this way, mate. I'm not too sure where it can go from here.
Well, you can get in touch with the three legends at any point if you want to have your say on our WhatsApp message. You can do that, 0330 043 2002. But you can also give us a call and speak to the legends themselves, 0330 043 2002. And we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to hear someone try and cheer Daz up as well. I mean, it started well though, Daz. A 2-0 win away at Cardiff,
mate. The 2-0 at Cardiff, mate, was brilliant. You know, lads stood up against it. You know, they played extremely well, dominated the game from start to finish. Listen, you know, I'm not saying they were you know, the top of the game, but you know, because Cardiff were poor on the day. But then it was just like night and day, mate. You know, you go from that, you know, you're thinking, yeah, you know, we've probably turned the corner here a little bit. You know, obviously, you know, we know the playoffs is not, you know, achievable. You know, we knew that going into the Cardiff game. But, you know, just to finish the season strong, you know, and get some good results and, you know, give something back to the fans. And then, you know, we had that shambles on Monday, mate. It was an absolute disgrace.
We were talking about last Friday, weren't we, that you'd turn the corner, or hopefully you'd turn the corner. But it couldn't. It was the wrong corner, wasn't it?
Yeah. No. Well, we had the hard, but they were hard. But it was into a 20-foot wall.
Crash. And Blackburn are one of them teams, Daz, isn't it? That you'd half fancy yourself against.
Well, this is the thing, mate. And you know, going into the game, you know, coming off the back of the Cardiff game, and I like to say, you know, I'm not saying we were fantastic at Cardiff, you know, because I think Cardiff were poor on the night, on the day, sorry. But you know, we were, you know. We controlled the game. We looked comfortable. We created umpteen chances. Obviously, Horvath in goal for Cardiff kept them in the game. You know, and there was always that slight chance at Cardiff. You know, they nicked a couple of chances here and there. You know, if they got a goal, who knows? But then, you know, you go into that against Blackburn, and first 10 minutes doesn't look too bad. So, you know, created a few things, and you know, a couple of players looked lively. And then it just seemed to stem. And listen, I'm not picking Roberts out because I think he's been fantastic, you know, throughout the season, early part of the season. But he just, you know, he lost the ball a couple of times, and he was chasing back, and you know, then Dan Neil, who was in utter control of the Cardiff game, started to turn into players that you know, lose the ball, and then it just escalated, and the more and more it happened. The more and more you're thinking, hang on a second, you know, these are going to nick a goal. You know, in which they did, you know.
But just doesn't this back up what us lads have been talking about all season with Sunderland? Because of that inexperience and, you know, how young they are, that's the thing that you find difficult sometimes with especially a full group of young players, is doing it game after game after game. You've just said Dan Neil runs the show on the Friday. On the Monday, he's doing the exact opposite. You know what I mean? And that's basically, in a nutshell, probably sums up what Sunderland's season's been about, because probably all the players are on a level playing field like this, they cannot follow up 2, 3, 4 consistent performances. No.
And this is the thing, mate. Consistency just hasn't been there. You know, all you know, most of the season. Yeah. You know, we've had a little bit of a run, and then obviously, you know, we'll hit a few back to back losses, or you know, or games what we should have won and we draw. But you know, like we said there, it was literally looked like a completely different 11.
But I think
there was only two changes.
I think the actual result, 5-1 at home to Blackburn, who Higgy points out, I haven't been pulling up any trees at all, in a bit of trouble themselves. You know, to lose that game, I think that's then been like probably a line in the sand for the supporters to think, come on, guys, we need something to be done here. This is to the people at the top. We cannot keep going like this. And we've talked about it before, whether you can finish in the playoffs or not, it's imperative to have a good finish to the season, not just for the confidence. When you're wanting to renew season tickets, when you're wanting to try and bring players to the football club, always know it's a bit more difficult trying to bring them to the northeast. Even though once they get you, they love it. They love playing for the three big clubs, the stadiums they've got, the support they get. And I think that's what's petering out. And one of my big things tonight was going to be, you know, this has got to be the one that, you know, is the final straw breaks the camel's back, and then we'll act to point the manager. But you get then the statement from Mike Dodds this morning in his press conference that he will be staying till the end of the season,
which has shocked me, mate, massively. Because you know, and like I say, you know, I'm not singling Roberts out, but I was surprised that he started the game on Monday. You know, he's been out a while, you know, and he didn't look sharp. He just didn't look up to the pace of the game. He looked slow behind it. You know, and I'm with you, Clark. You know, going off that game from Blackburn, I'm thinking, if I'm owner of the club, or if I'm going to make a decision, we need to get a manager in ASAP so he can start working with these lads. Not only give a peace of mind to some of the lads who were on long term contract, who the manager's going to be, some of the lads who are on the fringes and maybe he's leaving the club, who the next manager's going to be. You can't go into the summer not knowing who your manager's going to be the next season. You know,
it looks like
the bunny
though, doesn't it?
Well, that's the way they go, mate. I just don't understand it, mate, whatsoever. I really don't.
Do you think there was a bit of desperation from Dodgy to play Roberts? Because he is the creative one, isn't he? He's the one who you'd look to sometimes to provide a spark going forward. Do you think he just thought, listen, I'm desperate here for a result. I've got to play him, whether he's fully fit or not.
I think so, mate. Yeah, I think he's kind of maybe forced him into 11, thinking, you know, on the back of that, thinking, you know, well, we get something out of this, you know, we've turned the corner a little bit against Cardiff, this and the other. But mate, he looked a million miles off. And this is, you know, I'm a big fan of his. You know, I do like Robertson. I think he's creative. You know, he looks good when he's on his game. But he looked a million miles away, mate. A million miles.
Did the fans stick with him, wasn't there? Or were they leaving?
No, the fans were turning, mate, at half time. Just prior to half time, the fans were turning. I think a fair few left just after half time, because obviously we conceded just after half time, didn't we? So, you know, you watch the game and you're thinking, it's understandable, you know, because it looked like there was nothing on the pitch. You know, the players looked fatigued, they looked tired, they looked mentally drained, but for me, you know, they've had longer than Cardiff to recover. You know, I don't understand the side of things like that. You know, I think you can play two games in 3 or 4 days. You know, especially now. So I don't think we can even look for an excuse in that. I just think, you know, we were a million miles off. Whether it was a fact of playing at home, mate. You know, and if things go wrong, you know the fans are going to be on the case, because, you know, the fans are already a little bit disgruntled with what's going on at the club. But for me, you know, there's a lot of unsettlement there, and you can see it. And I think it does show in a lot of the young players' performances on the pitch.
Listen, guys, I'm never one that'll, you know, condone when fans have a go at players. You know, because I think, you know, majority of the time, the players are given everything. I mean, I hate this one when you lose a game and it's throwing at players that they haven't showed any fight or passion. That's a cheap shot for me, I think, sometimes. Hey, don't get us wrong, there is instances of that when they haven't played well and they've lost. But I just think this now has tested the fans' patience so much that they've like had enough, basically, and they're like wanting answers. And let's get it, you know, right here as well. Sunderland's average gate this season will be right up in the top six, if not even higher. The amount of fans are getting through at the Stadium of Light. So the fans have showed their support. They've come in their thousands to try and help these young lads on. But as we've said, by the way, lads, we've said this from day one, even, you know, when Mogga was in charge and stuff like that, they need help. These young players, it's impossible. You 100%. Ain't doing it. You ain't. I know there was the famous quote from Hansen, about you never win anything with kids from the class of 92 at Man United. But if you remember, there was five or six top young players that had five or six top experienced players with them as well, you know. Yeah. And I think that's what we've always got to remember. And if they don't change the philosophy, I think it's going to be a difficult time for them. I think.
By the way, Clarky, that was 1992, and we're now in 2024. What other teams have done what that Man U team done with that age? Do you know what I mean? It was just an unbelievable group of players, wasn't it?
Probably Nyaris, Tiggy, is probably not as long as these Liverpool boys who've kept Liverpool in Kent contention. Now they're getting all the big hitters back. They're top of the league. They're in the quarter final of the Europa League. They've won the Carabao, obviously knocked out the FA Cup. But, you know, those young lads have kept them in contention. So, but whereas the Man United boys went on to win trophy after trophy after trophy. So, exactly, you've just got to. I think there's got to be loads of questions, and that's why you cannot just take the loyalty of the fans for granted. I think sometimes we do up here because we expect the three clubs to get great fans through the gate all the time. But if they don't invest in a different project in the playing squad, two, with a manager who or a head coach, whichever way they want to go, who's going to excite the fans might start, you know, voting with their feet. Probably they won't because, you know, they've had worse times than this. But, you know, it's not cheap to go and be a football fan anymore, to go watch football.
No, it's not, mate. You're right.
And you've got to be able to see, you've got to see something. You've got to, obviously there's some exciting young players there, and we have mentioned that. But I think they're, like you said, they're starting to find it really difficult now. And I've read a few articles this week and listened to a few things coming back from the Sunderland, and you've got an inexperienced manager with an inexperienced squad, and it's not the way forward, unfortunately.
I think the thing is, mate, you're right in saying, you know, the fan base is fantastic. You know, they'll be up there within the top six, you know, of the average attenders in the league this year, but the wage bill is it towards the bottom. You know, the bottom six,
without a doubt.
No, so you've got to start levelling things up, and you know, and I totally agree with you. Experience is required. You know, when you've got so many young lads in and around that place. Not only that, mate. You know, things like this can kind of really, really disrupt a young player's career. You know, because the pressure gets to them. You know, it mounts. You know, their performances start going downhill. You know, teams who were maybe looking at them previously, you think, well, no, because he can't handle it.
And by the way, we're not talking about. Make this clear to the people who are listening to the show. We're not talking about just bring players coming towards the end of their career for their last payday. What we're talking about, experienced players who can still deliver, who are still going to be good enough to show these young lads what it's about, and then be able to talk them through what it's about as well. We're not on about go and sign 34s, 35, 36 year olds 2 year contracts for their last payday, and that, you know, the maybe kind of do it on the pitch. That's going to be no good to anybody. It's about
Clarky, you can be 24 and 25 and still be experienced, can't you?
Absolutely, of course you can.
Of course you can.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, sometimes you forget how young some of these lads are. They've been around for that long. They've got 250 games to their name, you know, and they're only 23, 24. So, without a doubt, I think it's a big, big couple of months. Honestly, it is. Because obviously the new owner and the sporting director, they haven't experienced when these supporters can turn, because they're brilliant for you, but if you upset them and they turn against you, it can be a tough period for you.
Is this the first time that there's been a downward spiral? Do you know what I mean? So they've got themselves promoted, they got themselves in the playoffs. And now this little period here, is this the first time we've looked at the club and thought, hang on a minute, it looks like it's going backwards now?
I think so, mate. Yeah, I think, you know, like you say, you know, we've had a bit of success over the last couple of years. You know, obviously, rightly so, you know, they deserved it. You know, obviously, Tony was, you know, orchestrator of quite a bit of that. You know, especially getting back in the Championship and obviously getting in the playoffs on the first season was fantastic. It's, it, you know, it's something I didn't really expect, mate. You know, going, you know, your first year back in the Championship, you know, we all know what the Championship's like. It's a tough division. But yeah, I think this is the first spiral, mate, and I think, you know, we've got to react on this. And, you know, we're 11 points from the drop. You know, and listen, I'm not saying that, you know, we're going to anywhere near the relegation, but the worrying thing is we've got West Brom, we've got Bristol, then we've got Leeds, then we've got West Brom, then we've got Millwall, then we've got Watford, then we finish off with Chef Wed. You know, and they're worrying games. Because, you know, a lot of those teams, you know, are doing extremely well. You know, Chef Wed, you know, cast aside, but they're still fighting for their lives, you know. And for me, you know, it's a worrying time. It is a really worrying time because
I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, Daz, because of what I've just said there. The people upstairs deserve a little bit of time then? Because if this is the first time that you can see a club going the other way, do they deserve a little time to get it right?
I think,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the fans that, you know, that they're happy, you know, to kind of draw a line under this season, mate. But I think what the fans want to see is steps forward. You know, like, you know, this whole manager situation. You know, why not look for somebody now? You know, why are we waiting till the summer? We don't want to rush the process.
For example,
do we?
For example, I'm seeing these stories all this week. Paul Heckenbottom. Does mean you know him well, Hecky. Yeah. He was at the club when I was there, when you were there. And he's got a track record as a manager. He's got a promotion from the Championship. He's got a track record of developing young players. If he's the target, he's out of work. Go and get him. Give him a chance. Exactly. Let him assess the squad for the last five or six games and then give his ideas. Yeah, if he's not the one making the final decision on who comes in, but give him an opportunity to say, well, oh, that position's where we're a little bit weak, or I'd like that type of player in this position. Give them a chance. Yeah. So there's that opportunity for them to hit the ground running. Because by, you know, everything I've read this week, it just looked like Hecky's nailed on for the position. Now, that might be just total newspaper talk. We don't know that, but we know how the game can work. But if that is the case, let's just get it done. You know what I mean? And to be honest with you, Hecky seems to tick all the boxes what the guys at the top want from a head coach. Do you know what I mean? He seems that type of coach.
And this is a worrying thing, mate. And I think a lot, you know, speaking to a lot of fans, you know, about Hecky, obviously, you know, we know him, like, you know, like you've said, and, you know, he's done well, and he, you know, he's a great manager. But a lot of them have said, yeah, but is he just another yes man? Mm-hmm. And that's where the worrying case comes in. Do you know what I mean? Because,
but Daz, if that's what the fans are, a yes man, then they're going to appoint a yes man, aren't they?
This is the thing, and I think a lot of fans that, you know, are saying, well, you know, why are we looking for a yes man? You know, why, so somebody can control him from above? You know, why is the manager not coming in and taking control of his team and taking control of the players that he wants to bring in? Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, so I think the fans are a little bit like disgruntled on that side of things, but, you know, a decision needs to be made. You know, somebody needs to come in and like we say, they need to start working now. So, you know, come next season, you know, we're not saying, oh, he's just going through the early stages of the manager coming in and the process of all that. You know, why is he not in now and getting used to the system and players who he wants to bring in? And then obviously we hit the ground running next season.
Well, like Clarkie says, if he's out of work now, there's nothing stopping them from going now and giving him a little bit of a running head start. But what that says to me is it might not be him. It might be someone in work. Do you know what I mean? It might.
Yeah, definitely.
So totally. I don't see the logic, like yous, I don't see the logic in them waiting. If the manager's already there, they've already spoken, he's nailed on for it, he's out of work.
Yeah.
I don't see any benefits to wait until the end of the season. I see a benefit for a manager because he might not want to go in now and think, well, we're losing. I don't want from now to the end of the season to get a reputation of, well, he hasn't won a game yet since he's been here. So I can see it from that manager's point of view.
Yeah, I think also, you know, there's obviously talk, you know, from the club basically saying that, you know, all the backroom staff who were there will still be there. You know, so for a manager coming in, you know, you've got to have the, you know, an idea of, can I work with these guys? You know, is it going to work? You know, so it's got to be the right man for the job. And this is what we're saying, you know. The decision's got to be spot on this time. You know, whoever they bring in, it's got to be spot on.
I get that, right, a little bit, because you're trying to be loyal to good guys, you know, like Proc and these type of lads who are working behind the scenes, and another lad that we know, Daz, loves the club, young kid, come through the ranks. But also sometimes, you know, when you were given a managerial position or head coach, whatever the title, sometimes you want to have a little bit of your own, like Tony had Mark Venus with him, do you know what I mean? And it's not about just coming in on your own and working with people, because you're having to start afresh, you know, with a new relationship with a whole backroom team. Now, I'm not saying give the new guy carte blanche and just decimate the whole backroom staff. Not at all.
Aye.
You know, there'll be good people there. But there's also, you know, for example, Heckey. He got promotion with Stuart McCall with him at Sheffield United. So he might be thinking, I want to bring Stu along again with us. You know, we work well. We found it difficult in the Premier League, but I think when Chris and Alan Nill have gone in there, it showed that that Sheffield United squad is nowhere near good enough, no matter which coach or management team's involved. So I'm just thinking that can always be that might be putting off Heckey. That might be like Higgins.
Well, it might be because what happens though, Clark, if you get in and you don't like each other, what happens then?
Exactly.
Who wins?
Exactly, Higgy. And by the way, players are very quick at assessing if coaching members aren't getting in. And what you said, Higgy, about there's three options here, right? There's Heckenbottom mightn't be the number one target. It might just be media speculation. Two, there might be some kind of clause that he cannot take a job this season with what's happened at Sheffield United, which can always happen.
Yeah.
You know that, Diggy, in managerial contracts. Or three, he might be saying, well, I want the job. It's a great job. It's a great job. It's in a massive club, great support, but surely you're going to let us bring some of my own backroom team in. Do you know what I mean? Who I trust, and they might be saying,
I think you need at least
that
one.
That could be the stumbling block.
He needs at least one, doesn't he?
But you can't just keep saying every head coach, they stay. And by the way, we're all going to coaching and management when we've been in it. We know the nature of the beast. One day we're going to lose our job.
Totally.
One day someone's going to come in as a manager. If I'm a coach, they're not going to. It's not that they're not going to like us or they mightn't like me work. They've got a relationship with other guys. So it's like that old type of stuff. You've got to be able to do it, you know.
On the plus side of things, gents, it's International Fans Day tomorrow at Sunderland, so at least there's going to be some sort of carnival type atmosphere there.
Talk about clutching at straws.
I know, yeah.
Talk about clutching.
We've had a WhatsApp in here, and I don't know if this will make the situation any better, Daz. Alan from South Shields has said, have they sacked the wrong person from the back room with sacking Steve Davison? Surely it's Speakman that needs to go. Ooh.
Listen, nobody's ever come out and clarified who made decisions on things that we've spoken about in the past. And this is what I'm saying, is there's not a lot of clarity comes out at this moment in time. And I think this is where the fans are a bit disgruntled.
Yeah.
You know, they're you know, about the manager, you know, about the backroom staff, you know, about people getting to... Listen, I've had numerous chats and been with around Steve, and I thought he was a great asset to the club. I don't see his involvement in the situations that went on. However, I don't know. You know, I'm not 100% clarity on that. But for me, you know, Steve does a lot behind the scenes at the club. You know, he does have the club at heart, because I know a lot of the fans think, you know, why would somebody who has the club at heart do things like that? But nothing's been clarified that he has actually done that. But, you know, for me, I would have kept Steve at the club. He's a great bloke. You know, I've obviously done a lot of things in and around the ground with him, you know, and, you know, hopefully he goes on to, you know, to get another job in football, because, you know, he's well worth, you know, whatever he gets, you know, working for that club.
Thanks, Daz. It is the Three Legends. We're here on the Cat, the Toon and the Red. You can get in touch at any time, 033 or 43 2002. We'll have more North East Legends chat right after this.
It's the Three Legends. Across the North East, Clark, legend. Williams, legend. Hignett, legend. WhatsApp us, call or send a voice message. Banter at its best. 033 00 43 2002.
Right across the North East, the Toon, the Cat and the Red.
And someone who's done that is Brian in Gateshead. He's a Geordie fan. I feel really flat after that West Ham win, and we can't beat Everton. We're going to have to do so much better than this if we've got any chance in Europe. A bit of a roller coaster Easter weekend, Clarky.
Yeah, very much so, Daz. I think.
I mean, not as bad as Sunderland's, but.
I was just going to say, I'll swap you.
I think Sunderland's roller coaster just threw everyone off before the end. I think there's a few casualties. I think the West Ham game, wow, what a match. It had everything. Injuries, red cards, chances, late goals. I mean, 3-1, you're thinking, wow, this could be 4-5-6. And then the last 30 minutes, Newcastle took control, put West Ham under pressure. And it's easy to see in hindsight, but when you're watching, you're thinking, wow, if you can get that second goal quickly enough and then put a bit of pressure on them, this could still end up in 3 points. And it did, so everyone's buzzing. And then you're coming in the Everton game, and there's no game ever easy, especially in the Premier League, but Everton aren't on a great run of form. They hadn't won in 12 before the Newcastle game. You're one up, we have opportunities. I mean, not really, it wasn't a brilliant performance, but it wasn't poor. And then we just commit football craziness, really, by giving a penalty away that we shouldn't have given away, you know? Mm. And It doesn't end up like a good result, 1-1 or 2-0 to Everton. It can be if we can follow that up tomorrow with a win at Fulham. But if we weren't, I mean, it gives you issues. I mean, if we had won that, you know, it would have given us one point off top seven at the minute, four off top six, and the teams above us aren't really getting great results either, so we could have closed the gap a bit there. But what it just goes on to me about, we touched on it last week, and Daz has already touched on it as well with regards Patrick Roberts, and we talked about Calvin Phillips, and we talked about how he'd been in the games, and how not playing regular does affect your rhythm, but how can you combat this? And I felt that was the same with Paul Dummett for the penalty.
Yeah,
he looked miles off the pace. He looked like he had no rhythm. He couldn't keep up with Ashley Young, and he ends up making an easy decision for the referee and for VAR. And I think, and I get all this 21 football. I get it. I've obviously worked in the game and had teams at that level, and also me son has come through that level of football and standard, and it produces some brilliant, technically, tactically, very astute young footballers. But I think we've got to find a place again in football where we can be bringing players back from either injury or senior players who haven't played for a long time, and play them in a standard of football that can get as close to first team football as possible. Now, what I'll mean, and the lads will back us up here, when we probably played reserve team football, you know, I've mentioned it before, some of my first games in Newcastle United reserves, Liverpool away playing against Jan Mulby. He'd never moved out the centre circle, but he never gave a pass away, stroking the ball around. Yeah. He was like a quarterback. My next game, Old Trafford away, Brian Robson, England captain, coming back from injury, hit us like a steam train, like I'd never been hit before. But the tempo of the game was as close to you could get as a first team football match. And I think we've got to bridge the gap between 21's football, but also getting these players. So you're like, say, Paul Dummett's, your Calvin Phillips, your Patrick Roberts, these senior lads who haven't played for a long time, where you can get them into an environment and play them in the stadiums, by the way, where the fans can come and judge them. Don't play them behind closed doors where they're not getting judged. And and they can get this close, because I'm seeing too many senior players now, Phillips, Dummett, Patrick Roberts, out the game, 6 weeks out the game, or Dummett's hardly played this season, Calvin Phillips hardly played this season, and it's causing them big, big problems, you know?
Yeah. Remember when we used to, I mean, I'm going back to when I was 15, so it's a long time ago, but we used to have like the B team and the A team when I was at Liverpool, and then the reserves.
Yeah.
But I remember playing in the B team, I'm still at school, we went and played Manchester United B team, Remy Moses played, and he'd been out for a long time, come back, and he was playing in that game. I mean, if you looked at it now and you know, you'd think it was barbaric, wouldn't you? Like someone like Remy Moses playing against school kids and that. But that's what it used to be like. We used to go and play against the army or the post office and play in a men's league, that B team, which, you know, with all that health and safety stuff and the safeguarding, it's not allowed to do no more. But I get what you're saying, Clarkie. If, you know, reserves didn't used to be 21s. Reserves used to be open age, and it was for everyone. Yeah. And if you weren't playing on a Saturday, you would go and play.
You had lots of seniors playing in it, Higgy.
Yeah.
You'd come up against you'd come up against international players, etc.
Well, you're right, because when I was, 16, 17, playing in Liverpool reserves, we'd have, like, every week, Gary Ablett would play, Paul Walsh would play. You know, you'd have a load of Ronnie Whelan, I can remember playing in, Steve McMahon played. It was like you were sort of a bit part in a first team game rather than the other way round. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's kids.
And by the way, you're never going to replicate the tempo of a first team game. Never, ever. No. I get that. But this is as close as you get. And the 21 football is a different type of football. It's an environment that's trying to create technically high technical footballers, high tactically aware footballers, but played at a different sort of tempo. The onus is on a different type of thing. The onus is on possession-based football, etc., etc. Whereas these games that we played in were more of the tempo of a first-team game. Because no matter what happens, you know, I've seen it when I was manager at Birmingham, I've seen it with my own son. You know, the 21 game is completely different to the first team game. So the 21s that we had at Birmingham, they needed to do something different if I put them into the first team at Birmingham, or the same with my son at Liverpool, and the same with all the clubs. You know, for example, you know, this possession stuff, if you went and played in Newcastle's first team and you just played it around the back for 40, 50 passes and got nowhere, well, those 52,000 would be up in arms. It would be the same at the Stadium of Light, same at the Riverside. They want to see forward passes. They want to see, you know, speed. Yeah. They want to see people getting in behind. And what I'm saying is, especially for these senior players, there's got to be a way. Because what's happening now is, if they're not getting a run of games, getting any rhythm, and I know they have these, what they're called, bounce games, which are basically games behind closed doors, but the pressure's not really on them if they played it. Say, for example, for Dummett and the lads who aren't getting in at Newcastle at the minute, and there's not many of them, there's quite a few youngsters with the injuries, but for the seniors, they're playing Man United in the reserve game at St James's, and you might get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 there. And you know people are going to judge you, they're going to make comment on you, so you want to put in a strong performance, and you want to create an opportunity where the manager goes, he's ready to go back in the team. But at the minute, what's happening with these managers, David Moyes, when he put Calvin Phillips on at 3-1, when they were 3-1 up against Newcastle, and it just totally backfired because the lad is nowhere near match tempo.
Yeah.
Mm. Now,
the other thing with the dumbest,
he's probably doing all the work that the club's asking and the sports science team and the fitness coaches, but you know, lads, training and all that type of running and sports science. Matches only get you match fit.
Yeah, they do. 100%. But it's with the Dummett one though, Clarkie. I just thought, you know, with the way the game is now and VAR and everything, if you do that in the penalty area, you're going to get a penalty given against you. You're never going to get away with it anymore.
You've got
no chance.
You've got no chance, mate. Absolutely.
It was just
no
a crazy chance. Decision for me.
Yeah,
I'd much rather have let him go and risk him scoring than dragging him down and giving a penalty away.
See if we can defend it. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's still not, as I said, 1 point off the top seven, 4 points off the top six. Teams above us, i.e. West Ham, Brighton, Man United losing, you know. So
I mean, what a game that was last night, Man U. Oh, you know, wow. You're 3-2 up in the 109th or 111th minute, and you lose 4-3.
Yeah.
Scary, mate.
Unbelievable.
I mean, they're trying their very best, aren't they, to let Newcastle catch them?
Yeah.
And you don't know what Man U are going to... I mean, Liverpool have got Man U on Sunday. I bet you it's a different Man U that plays on Sunday than it is than it was against Chelsea. But I see Marcus Rashford's coming for a little bit of stick again, hasn't he? You know, there's a couple of clips floating about of him closing down or just, lack of
yeah, it's his body effort. Language, isn't it? It's just his body language. It's just there's no urgency to his game. You know, he's not closing down, and you know, as quick as he do, you know, used to do before, he's not chasing a lot of things that he would have done before. You know, his body language just seems like, you know, it's elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, they're the things that frustrate fans, aren't they? When you see someone just jogging over to someone to close him down, that they're the things that get you noticed as well. And you know, he's coming for a right bit of stick lately. But listen, he's obviously a top player, isn't he, Rashford? And whatever's going on behind the scenes, we don't know about, do we? There might be all kinds going on behind that scenes. It doesn't seem like a happy place to be at the minute, that Manchester United camp. But listen, that's Premier League, isn't it? You can get done in the Premier League. I mean, I was at the Liverpool game last night, and you know, they were toiling for a little bit. I don't know if you were there, Clarkey, but what a goal it was from McAllister, edge of the box, to light things up again.
I think it's another example of the, in which he's been terrific this season, the manager using the substitutes very well. And he made a big call, taking
Salah.
You know, everyone thinks he's untouchable, but this is why Jürgen's one of the very, very best. He sees what's right. He feels what is needed to be done for the team to win the game, and he's not frightened of making those decisions. And I mean, I don't know the exact stats, but I bet his substitutes that he's made over the course of the season have changed the game, because I think they've come from behind at 1-0 down on loads of occasions this season.
I think it's 8 now.
So it just shows you that's where the strength of your squad comes in as well. And when we're talking about it, Liverpool starting to get all the senior players back now, where you can make those decisions. You're bringing Andy Robertson on, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, who's so unlucky not to be starting. And anyway, Cody Gakpo gets a goal for you as well. So it's that's a difference. I think that's where I felt sorry a little bit for Eddie on Tuesday against Everton, when I looked in terms of attacking prowess, he didn't have a lot. He had untried kids again. His strength was in his defenders, in terms of his experience with Dummett and Matt Ritchie. I know Matt can play as a wide man, but he's played a lot of his football the last few years as he's got older, as a type of wing back, stroke full back at times. So, it just must be hard. And I think they've picked up, obviously Lascelles is out for 9 months. He's another ACL with Botman.
Is he out of contract in the summer, Clarkey?
No, he kicked in an extension, Higgy, as part of his contract. He'd hit the number of games that were required to get his year's extension not long before he picked up the ACL. So, but it's probably going to affect the transfer strategy in the summer. Because obviously they're going to be very, very short next season for defenders, with Botman and Lascelles out for a minimum of 6, probably closer to 9 months. Both ACL. Young Lewis Hall, who's come in and done quite well, actually, the last couple of games, came on against West Ham and was a positive impact, and then was doing all right against Everton. He's picked up a bit of an injury. Not sure if he's going to be available tomorrow. And then we're still getting, obviously, the stuff around Bruno Guimaraes and Alexander Isak about being sold, you know, which is obviously always a worry.
I don't know if you've seen or you've read anything, but it was in the Daily Mirror yesterday about a luxury tax coming in instead of these profit and sustainability rules.
Point deductions,
Yeah, so they still want, apparently the Premier League still want the points deductions there as a deterrent. But it's going to, you know, it's for serial breakers of the rule. So if you go so much over, You can pay, like, it's what's called a luxury tax. So the clubs who want to do it and spend their own money, and the owners want to spend their money, they'll get hit with a fine or a tax for going so much over. But I think what the Premier League want to do is keep the points deduction for people who go over ridiculously.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Liberties. It might not come in this year or next year, but it's something they're talking about. And it got me thinking, it was, you know, because we've seen Everton get done. We've seen Nottingham Forest who've got done. Manchester City have got 115 charges still sitting over them.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, because the appeal was, the charges were lodged against Manchester City now, they will be treated with the old rules. And it got me thinking of, how can you think these rules aren't good enough? Bring in new rules, but still go to the old rules when it,
for Man City,
do you know what I mean? When it comes to charging Manchester City. And listen, they deserve to be charged. If Everton get 4 points taken off, Forest have had points taken off, then Manchester City with 115 charges deserve points taken off. There's no doubt about it. But it makes me wonder whether people at that club have had a heads up and thought, we'll argue every single charge to drag it out, and then by the time it comes to it, these rules won't even be involved anymore. But apparently they're going to still be judged under the old rules, which seems nuts to me.
Yeah.
The
whole thing is
but it might be, it might be all right for Newcastle in moving forward, because they might be able to keep the likes of Isak and Guimaraes, because they've got the money to pay the fines. Do you know what I mean? If it is this luxury tax that comes in, that's a better way for me, because you'll get more clubs having a go, and it'll be a fairer competition, I think.
I do, I agree with you. I totally agree.
Something needs to happen, doesn't it, just to make it fairer. And, you know, there's the whole points deduction. No, we're not we're not taking points. Yes, we are. You know, asterisks, the season of our asterisks, it's making the league look a farce, isn't it? And I think fans
are fed up with that. Well, it is at the minute, because you could have a situation come the end of the season where clubs don't know if they're relegated or not because of the situation with Forest.
City might not know if City win the league, what happens there if they get points taken off them?
Yeah, exactly.
It's just up in the air, isn't it? It's mad.
Yeah. Gents, we need to take another short break, and when we come back, we'll have a chat about Boro's Week with Higgy, and you can also have your say if you've got anything you want to add to the three legends, 033 or 043 2002, and we'll chat more after this.
Clark, legend. Williams, legend. Hignett, legend. It's the three legends. WhatsApp us, call or send a voice message. We don't bite. 033 00 43 2002.
Right across the northeast, by the fans, for the fans, the tune, the red and the cat.
It is the three legends on the cat, the tune and the red, right across the northeast. Coming up at 7, we've got Ian Murta and Black and White and Red all over. Ian joins us now. Ian, what we've got coming up on the show this evening?
Well, do you know, lads, when you lost a game, and every footballer says it, don't they? They say, we just want to get back out there and play again. Well, is that the case after a 5-1 home defeat? I wonder.
Are we, so, man?
Well,
what's going on here?
No. Listen. I thought the best person to ask a fan. So I've, my first guest is Gavin Henderson, who runs the excellent Roker Report website and podcast. I just want to get the mood music at Sunderland at the moment, because for 18 months or so, fans were looking forward to going to the stadium, and now it's back to a grind, back to dreading going, or going almost out of a sense of duty. So I'm very interested to hear what Gav's got to say. And my second guest is Chris Woff of The Athletic, who covers Newcastle United. Now, a lot of issues at Newcastle. Will they qualify for Europe? Which competition? But I think the question everyone's asking at the moment is, will their top players stay? Alexander Isak, and I'm sure you've been talking about him on the show tonight.
Yeah, we talked
about
that, Ian. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the moment he is actually outscoring Erling Haaland in terms of goals per rata, and one of the hottest properties around. And of course, Bruno Guimaraes, will he want to play at a club that is possibly not in Europe or even playing European Conference? So So that's an issue I'll be putting to Chris. Middlesbrough, well, they're going along smoothly, aren't they? I'm heading down to the Riverside tomorrow, looking for, hoping they extend their record to 7 unbeaten. I was there on Monday. They played very well. So Darren, you and I will have a chat about Borough in between talking to Chris and Gavin.
Yeah. Sounds good. Ian, you can catch Ian with Black and White and Red all over after the Three Legends at 7 this evening. Thanks, Ian. We'll catch you in a bit.
Will do.
Yeah, thanks, Ian.
Cheers, thanks, Ian.
Thanks, lads. Cheers, Ian.
So, Borough, Higgy, it's, yeah, 4 points out of 6. Would you have taken that before the weekend?
Yeah, especially, you know, Southampton away was a great result, getting a draw down there. And you know, played quite well as well, but then as Ian said, I thought they played really well against Sheffield Wednesday. Sheffield Wednesday weren't great. They had a couple of chances. I just want to read this stat out to make Daz feel better. So Sheffield Wednesday have 5 shots. How many on target, Daz?
None.
5-1. So 5 shots, 1 on target.
Oh, mate, how are
you? It proper tickled me, that stat. When I seen that stat, it proper tickled me.
Have you rehearsed this before?
No, but listen, it was dominant from Borough, I thought. They had 23 shots. They only had 5 on target, but the possession, 65%. They were well worthy of the win. Missed a penalty. Obviously, Greenwood's hit the post with a penalty. Lattie Lath tried to claim a goal. It wasn't a goal, it was an own goal, but he's tried his best to claim it because he's in a rich vein of form. And then Isaiah Jones gets a goal, a little bit fortunate because I think it took a little deflection and it looped up and over the keeper. But really, it was a comfortable day's work for Borough. I thought Borough were good in spells. 6 points off a playoff, but I just think the run that they're on now has just come a little bit too late. You know, we were calling for it, weren't we, earlier in the season, saying, you know, go on a bit of a run where you can go 5, 6, 7 games unbeaten, get yourselves in there. And they weren't able to do it, but like they're going along all right now. And then, but listen, if they get close enough, then I'm sure they'll put in a dicky performance because that's the way the season seems to have gone. It's been just too inconsistent, really, to force their way in. So it's same old, same old. They've got a big summer again. They have to improve. They have to make a run for the playoffs next season. But it's nice that they're finishing the season the way they are. Yeah. I think, you know, like Clarkie said earlier, when you want to attract players to your club, it helps when you're in a good vein of form and you finish strongly in the league that you're in. So hopefully they'll continue to do that until the end of the season.
Well, Andy from Gisborough has been in touch on the WhatsApp, and he said, what's all this talk about not getting excited about the playoffs again? I am excited about us getting near the playoffs. I think we can do it.
Well, they've got 6 points to make up on Norwich.
Yeah.
And 6 points with 6 games left. It's a tall order. You know, you're asking Norwich to be 6 points less than Borough in the running. And whilst it doesn't sound a lot, it's only, you know, it's 2 games, but depends on the goal difference as well, doesn't it? Mm. It could be 2.5 games. And when you've only got 6 games left, it's a big ask. It is a big ask. The only way they could possibly do it is to win every game from now till the end of the season. But even then, I don't think it'll be enough. I don't. It's just they've just left it a tad too late for me.
Do we know what that run of games are, lads? Is
it? Norwich, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and it's. I'll tell you now what the run of games are. I mean, they've gone along quite smoothly. So, but Borough they've still got Hull to play. They've still got Ipswich to play. They've got Leeds to play. Then they've got Cardiff away and Watford at home, last game of the season. But I mean, they've got a tough run of games. Ipswich away is going to be tough. Leeds at home will be tough.
I agree with you, Higgy. I think they have to win all 6. They're going to do.
Yeah, they've got to, Clarkie. Definitely. I mean, Swansea, I was at the Swansea game away when Swansea actually battered Borough and could have scored 4 or 5 and missed all kinds of chances, and Borough ended up nicking it. There was a Silveira free kick right at the end he scored. And so I was at that game. So that's not a given, you know, tomorrow's game against Swansea. But then, you know, they've got Hull away on Wednesday, they've got Ipswich away next Saturday, and then they've got Leeds. That's the next 3.
I'm looking at Norwich's running here, Iggy, and they've got Ipswich, Sheffield, Preston, Bristol, and then Swansea and Birmingham. So
you see, Norwich going to be 6 points less with that running. than Borough on their running. It's not going to happen, does it? The only way it can happen is if Borough go on a ridiculous run where they win all six of them games. Yeah. But to ask them to beat Ipswich away, Hull away, Leeds at home, that's going to be a tough ask. You know, they may well beat Cardiff away, but even then, that's not going to be a gimme. And then the last game of the season, it's Watford at home. So there's some tough games in there, but and even when you look at what Borough have done, you know, but I think Borough are unbeaten in six games now.
Yeah.
You know, since the Stoke 2-0, where they've beat Norwich, they beat QPR, beat Birmingham, and then they've drawn with Blackburn and Southampton, and obviously beat Sheffield Wednesday. So listen, it's a tough ask. I look at it and I like to be optimistic, don't get me wrong, but there's optimistic, isn't it? And then there's rose tinted spectacles and when they've had the season, tell you what would be it's difficult.
I tell you what would be good, Iggy, going down the last game.
Yeah.
Going down the last game for, just for the, you know, the chance of getting in the playoffs.
I mean, to prolong your season, having something to play for, you know, when it looked for all the world as though they were just going to meander about mid-table with nothing to play for. I think it's a good return, do you know what I mean, on the games they've played recently when we thought was, you know, they were just going to be mid-table, but they've been a little bit better than that. They've put a little bit of a run together, and it's give everyone a little bit of hope, and I think it's livened the crowd up a little bit. You know, they're going to games now a little bit happier, and like I say, if they can continue it till the end of the season, and if they miss out on the playoffs by 4 points, then I think that'll have been a really good season considering what happened in the summer. And then you're looking forward to next season as a fan, aren't you? To see what they do in the summer, who's coming in, who's going out, because they've got a little bit of scope to have a go. And I think, like we said before, next year, that'll be the year where we'll all judge Michael Carrick properly, because, you know, this year's been a little bit of a free hit for him. Like, I keep going on about what happened in the summer with Akpom and Archer and Ramsey and them going, Giles going. But I think this summer is a massive summer for them. And if they can finish the season, you know, continue the form they're on, then that'll be a bonus, and it'll help to recruit other players as well. So, I'm pleased with the way things are going at the moment.
Good stuff.
Yeah, well, should we do some predictions, gents? Should we, while we're on Borough then?
How did we get on with the predictions last week? We said three wins, didn't we? I don't think anyone got a score right.
I certainly didn't go up a full
three.
That's
not like us.
No. I don't think anyone did.
No. I'm going to start keeping a tally.
Are we predicting both the championship teams, because they've got two games before we're next on air, aren't it?
Yes.
I'm just taking one game at a time, mate.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get out of the way and I'll let the two championship clubs fight over the rest. I'll go for two at my old club, Fulham. I think it's going to be a difficult game. I was down with a cup tie, Newcastle deservedly won. I think this is going to be a draw. I think the Borough will beat Swansea at home tomorrow, then draw with Hull. Sorry, Daz, I think the best you can hope for tomorrow is a home draw against Bristol City, and then you're getting beat at Elland Road off a very strong Leeds team. Yeah. Sorry, pal. No, and then next Friday, I don't know how you're going to be coming on the show, to be honest.
I'm not going to be, mate.
I might just be happy to hear your voice next Friday, Daz. I'm going to...
put a picture of me up?
I'm going to leave you till last, Daz, to predict this, because I'm going to go... I think Borough will beat Swansea. I'm going to go 2-1. Borough will win that one. I think Bristol City. So I think... I keep thinking Sunderland at home, but I think that might have knocked them massively. And I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go 1-1. And then Fulham. I think Newcastle will beat Fulham. Yeah. Clarkey, I think Fulham are on a bad run and they're letting goals in. I think the camp might be a bit unhappy because of what he did, taking the three players off after, what, half an hour? Against Forest.
Good point.
I'm going to go 2-1 for Newcastle as well. And then Hull away for Borough. Ooh, I'd take a draw. I really would take a point. I think a point would be a good point there. And then Leeds away, Daz. Anything, you know, keep it below four, I'd be happy with that.
Teen.
No, I'm going to go 3-1 for Leeds in that game. I think Leeds are so strong at home.
I'm feeling so much better, lads. Thanks.
It's reverse psychology. You never know.
Have you done your predictions, Daz?
Daz hasn't.
Yeah, I'm going to do mine now, mate. Yeah, I'm going to do them now. So I'm going to go with a Newcastle win. I'm going to go 2-0. I'm going to go with Borough's back-to-back games. I'm going to go with 2-0 and a 2-1 win on both.
Ooh, win them both.
6 points. Fair play,
yeah,
Daz.
Win on both, mate. Yeah, I'm going to go for
that
it.
That is squeaky bum time, isn't it, if they get two wins out of them
it
two.
It is, mate. It is. Sunderland.
I'm going to clip that up for the best of.
I'm going to go with a home win of 2-1.
Home win.
Yeah, home win. I'm
he
thinking about Leeds.
Say it, did he? He didn't want to say that.
And I'm going to go. This may surprise you. I'm going to go with a 1-1 against Leeds.
Well, that's a coupon buster. That is a coupon buster,
isn't it?
I'm just looking on the bet. I'm just looking on the betting app now and see how much it is.
Listen, really quickly before we go, Bri has been on from Newcastle. He said last night's game, the Chelsea-Man United, was one of the best Premier League games he's ever seen. What's your best ever Premier League game? 30 seconds.
Well, I think the Newcastle-Liverpool ones take some beating, don't they?
Newcastle-Liverpool.
Best game I've ever seen was Istanbul-Liverpool against AC Milan, European Cup final.
That's a good one.
Aye.
I don't speak about them Liverpool games, Siggy. I was on the wrong end both times.
I know.
Yes. Can I just say as well, I've got the pronunciation right. It's Oshish for Sunderland. That's it. Not
is
a Tucci's or Hoochie's.
Is that a new restaurant?
It's only took him 2 weeks.
Oh, sheesh. It's up between 7 and 11.
Yeah. Have a good weekend, chaps. Take it easy.
All the best. See you later, fellas.